Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guests today are two people who made a very powerful documentary film called The Hornet's Nest about American forward units in Afghanistan. Mike Boettcher is an award-winning war correspondent who was embedded, along with his son Carlos Boettcher, with the U.S. Army and Marines for 2 years in Afghanistan. David Salzberg was the movie's co-director and producer. Mike and David, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Mike, let me start with you. Tell me how this project came to be.
Well, I was a correspondent for NBC News covering the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I wanted to do it differently. I wanted to go back to old traditions, traditions set by Ernie Pyle during World War II, and tell the stories of those soldiers we had sent to Afghanistan in our name. Because we had basically stopped embedding. We weren't hearing these stories. And originally, this was to be an NBC News project. They decided against it. I decided I was going to leave on my own and do this, and I did. And it eventually became an ABC News project where we embedded full time. In the midst of all of this, we decided we were going to make a film that would be an historical document about the war, because not that many people were there. You'd think that with so many thousands of troops committed that there would be coverage, and there wasn't. So we decided to fill that void.
And place the different groups of soldiers that you were embedded with and their missions in the broader context of the war. Where were they?
Okay. We began this in the beginning of the surge in 2009. So initially, we went to Helmand Province, which is in the southern portion of Afghanistan, where the Marines were the beginning forces of that surge that was declared by President Obama, who was newly elected at that time, and said that he was going to have a surge of troops so we could bring our troops home eventually, but that we needed more there. So we were there for that and then ended up in the northeast part of Afghanistan, took a few months off after that whole year of doing that, came back, and again, we were in the south in Helmand Province, in Kandahar Province, which is also in the south, the more desert portion of Afghanistan, and then we ended up in the mountains of northeast Afghanistan in Kunar Province. And basically, what happened there is the heart and soul of our documentary.
And is that where the name of the film comes from?
It is. I was assigned, I assigned myself because I was embedded. Let me correct that. We were in that portion of the country, and this was to be one of the biggest operations of the war, and they thought it would take a couple of days. We were going to land near the Pakistan border and go after the Taliban command and control that was in the mountains that were anywhere from 8 to 14, 15, 16,000 feet in that section of Afghanistan. And this little two-day routine mission turned into be a nine-day mission, and six soldiers died in the first few hours of this. And we were surrounded for days and had to fight our way out of there to get back. And, you know, this film is not about these battles, really. It's about the men and women in these battles and their battles to protect the guy on the left of them and the person on the right of them and to live the next day.
And you were joined by your son in this, and watching scenes from the movie that I've been able to see, that just seems mind-blowing to me as the father of a 16-year-old. So tell me how that happened.
Well, you know, I've been a network correspondent for more than three decades, and that job took me away from home a lot for NBC News, for CNN, and now for ABC. You know, a typical year would be being away from home 280 days to 300 days a year. My son grew up hating this business because it took his dad away. You know, his dad was there when the Berlin Wall fell, when Panama 103 came crashing down on Lockerbie, for any number of events around the world. If something bad happened, I was there. Since 1980, that's been my job. And Carlos wanted nothing to do with this business. And when I decided that I wanted to change the way we cover this war, he asked if he could go with me. He was a student at George Washington University, and he asked if he could go with me. And I tell you what, I've lost a lot of friends, 38 close friends who were journalists, not counting soldiers and others who have died that I've been with over the course of these three decades. But I've lost a lot of friends, and I then suddenly have my son saying he wants to go with me. I was really proud of him, and at the same time, I was scared to death because, as we say in the film, the one thing I could not let happen was to let my son die. And I agreed to let him come, and it was the best decision I made in my life, frankly.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Mike Boettcher and David Salzberg, makers of the documentary film The Hornet's Nest about forward units in Afghanistan. David, let me turn to you. When did you come into the film story?
I came into the film story 2 years ago, maybe 2 years and 3 months ago. And one thing I should tell you, it's even though it's made with real footage, it's an immersive narrative feature. And the difference being most documentaries have a significant point of view they try to steer you toward or away from. And what we decided to do early on when Christian, Thoreau, Carlos, and Mike and I sat down, we decided to make the film non-political and ordinary man and woman in extraordinary circumstance, because we felt after spending a lot of time with Mike, the only way to show them in a fair light was just to show them the way they are. And that was probably one of the best decisions we made when making the film.
And Mike, you've had, as you said just a few minutes ago, you've had a lot of reporting experience from wars and other dangerous places. That's really been your stock and trade as a journalist. You were taken hostage in El Salvador in 1985, for example. I was curious to know, is there one thing in particular about this experience that was different from your other past experiences that most stands out to you?
Yes. It was the fact that with this film and doing this coverage for ABC News long term, no longer was I parachuting in and only slightly getting to know the subjects who were there. I was there for the long term. So these guys became part of my family, and that was what was different. These were folks who looked after me. You know, I'm a 59-year-old guy climbing mountains at 10,000 feet or in the deserts at 138 degrees, and I can do that. That's my job. I'm good at that. I don't need any special handler at all for that. But the thing was about this film, finally, after all these years of covering really bad things and moving on to the next really bad thing, this time I decided to stay and live the consequences of those bad things that happened. And that's what's special about this film, we believe. It's not that I parachuted in for 3 or 4 days shoehorning a story in that, you know, I wanted to do. I let the story unfold in front of me and let it unfold for months at a time.
And David, you mentioned before about the particular point of view of the film or deliberately trying not to have a message. I wanted to ask you, beyond that, as a director and a producer, what are the things that most strike you about this film that are different from your past experiences with films?
It's a good question. I think the most important thing for me is that the relevance and importance of the film itself at this time in the country's history. I think that looking – what Mike just said about the fact that he was brought in and welcomed his family. And we've spent a lot of time talking to the guys he was embedded with and the women he was embedded with. And, you know, they've had a lot of reporters around over the years, and most of the time they don't really like them. Because they, you know, it's somewhat intrusive in their space, or they can't take care of themselves. Well, Mike has more battlefield experience than most of the highest ranking officer or the highest ranking non-commissioned officer because he's been doing it 30 years. I think that just after 12, almost 13 years of war, having this film come out and show these people who aren't looking for a medal, aren't looking for a big pat on the back, just show what they're doing with a country that's become somewhat desensitized to it because of how media is so instantaneous, is really, really important. To have the public seat at this point in our country's history, it's very important.
My guests are Mike Boettcher and David Salzberg. Mike filmed and also appears in the documentary film, The Hornet's Nest. He was an embedded journalist with the U.S. Army and Marines in Afghanistan. David was the movie's co-director and producer. Well, Mike, as you said before, you got close to these soldiers because you had quite a bit of time with them. I wanted to know, is there one in particular that has most stayed in your head since you got done doing this?
Yeah, it was the heart and soul of the Nose Slack battalion. That was Sergeant Arachaga, Ofrin Arachaga, and he was the guy that always had the smile, that was always cracking the joke, but was a really serious leader. You know, all of them affected me in one way or the other. And the thing is, I got to tell you, you know, you're covering something like this and you're going into what you know is a very dangerous mission, but you don't know who's going to die. You know, someone is. So it's, you don't go in saying, I'm going to profile this person and he will likely die. You just don't know. I mean, it could be you. But he was one of the guys, you know, I got to know. And it, you know, his death in the first 6 hours of that operation had a profound impact on the unit I was with.
And David, I understand that you've screened this film for veterans who've returned from Afghanistan, and as I understand it, for some of the guys who are in the film itself. What was that experience like?
Because of Mike's background with the units he was embedded with, we decided early on that we were going to – actually, two reasons. When we first started speaking to some of the command officers Mike was with, a colonel in the 101st and another colonel in the 28 Marines, and we told them what we were going to do, they said to us that if it would be very important to them that if we would take the film to some of the Gold Star families, that Mike was with their sons or daughters during this embed period, and show the film to the family that lost their loved one during this period to bring closure to them and, you know, and to show them what their son or daughter was actually in. And that turned into a larger extension of what Mike's experience was in country, where he was welcomed in as part of the unit. He was, you know, with these units, he was actually part of the unit with them. So screening for the Gold Star families who were seeing the last day their loved one was alive, screening for their brothers and sisters, screening for the members of the units, we decided after a couple of screenings that they were going to be the focus group. And since the most important, you know, the subject matter and the group that stands to gain the most benefit from the film are the people that are in it, the military and the families. And since nothing had ever been done, at least as far as we had seen, we've researched a lot of films that we really like. Restrepo is a great film, and we like To Hell and Back, another film. But this film had to be different than or better than. And by working with the families and the members of the units, it allowed them to have a voice. And that's made a big difference in the way the film turned out.
It reminds me, too, of, I guess, in a way, you know, the letters that get written to the soldiers' families, next of kin after they've been killed. It seems like this is, in a way, what you were doing, kind of a different kind of version of a letter like that.
A very personal version. Yeah. Because they get that letter and it says your son or daughter died in such and such a place serving his country. What this film does is take those families there and takes you there to those places they died. And it's tough. You know, something, it's really tough for me even to watch it again and again and again. It's hard. I think one of the main things about this film is it's not, you know, the benefit of this film is not about the war that was, although this is an historical document of the war in one of the biggest times of that war, which was the surge. But what this film does is explain to the 99%+ of America that does not have to feel the pain of war, what these soldiers went through in our name. Whether we were passive about that or active, it's what these soldiers went through. And now the new battle is back here at home. Soldiers who've lost limbs, who have traumatic brain injury, who have post-traumatic stress disorder, who have any number of disorders, our battle here is now with those soldiers. And how are we going to handle this giant problem that will only get bigger? What are we going to do for them? And we hope that this film activates people because it gives them the experience of what these soldiers went through, and it activates people immediately. What do I do? And we hope that we become a major part of the conversation in this.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations, and I'm talking with Mike Betcher and David Salzberg, makers of the documentary film The Hornet's Nest, about American forward units in Afghanistan. I wanted to pick up on exactly that point, and David, maybe I'll ask you this question, but it's the point that Mike was just making. On this program a few months back, I interviewed Zoe Wool, and she's a researcher who has been working with and writing about returning wounded veterans. And one of the things that struck me the most about my conversation with her was the way that the veterans, after they came back, often had to emotionally take care of the civilians who encountered them. They had to respond to that person's needs and to make them feel okay about seeing this person in front of them and that everything made sense and that everything was going to be okay. And the thought I had at the time in talking to her was, gee, you know, their service to the country continued after they got back when it should have been the other way around. Do you have thoughts about that or more generally about the way that our veterans are being treated back here at home?
Before
now?
David speaks, yeah. Let me just say that what David has done with this film, not just produce and direct, what David does day after day after day for hours a day, he's on the phone with the families constantly of hundreds, if not thousands now, of veterans. Go ahead, David.
When we first started working with Mike and realized what he and Carlos had captured with this footage, and also we actually got some great footage from a chaplain, Justin Roberts, who ran down the hill without a gun with Mike with his camera running, we had something that would have a profound impact on people that are back here. And it really started with, you know, we're talking to the families and, you know, the guys more so come back, and the women too, but the guys, because they're a larger population, come back and they lose their ability to be part of a unit unless they're still in the service, but they end up isolated. And they don't talk about all the bad things that they went through. One, they figure people can't relate to it unless they were physically there, which is true. And a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, you know, they ask what happened, but they don't really care, and the guys are going to tell them something they won't understand. So one thing that's been very, very interesting for me, I mean, as much as being with a Gold Star family in the room and looking at their reaction to the film, is the reaction of the wives. The wives, we constantly have these wives who are in the service themselves, even if they've never been in the military, that they have a husband or a spouse that keeps going back and keeps going back to serve his country, whether it's Afghanistan, Iraq, or wherever, and they're by themselves with the kids. And the guys come home and they don't talk. So the great – some of the greatest notes that we've received have been from these wives who say, oh, my God, I was so nervous about my husband seeing this and he saw it. And for some reason, seeing something third person, even if it might be you or might represent what you experienced, somehow has an effect to take pressure off of people. Somebody called it digital medicine, which is really a great term. And these notes that we get from the gold stars, from the wives, from the actual guys and the guys are all, you know, they were with Mike and Mike had a camera. They're like, oh, my God, someone actually really made a movie, because they heard over many years someone's going to make a movie, someone's going to report on this, and nothing ever happens. And in their reaction has been to embrace us as family. We could never have made this film the way that it is now without being braced by the officers, the non-commissioned, the wives, the family, the gold stars. All these people that just have said this, they've said this, the same thing that the viewers that have seen the film that are not military have said. They've said every American needs to see this, which has been a common, constant comment. And they also say after that, which is amazing to me, how can we help? And then you get the people that are actually the wounded warriors and guys that are on the missions. And we stopped calling it a film. We started calling it a mission. They join the mission because they end up helping each other out, and it creates conversation and dialogue, which, you know, in speaking to Mike, and we've met with a lot of people that are much smarter than I am that have said this is incredibly important. It's going to help people, help the country, because no one has shown this perspective before. And we're honored to do it. And our whole team, there's just so many people back in Los Angeles and around the country, volunteered for the last 18 months. I mean, guys just got – some guys – one of our guys, Brent Donis, just got his Emmy. He's been working on the film for 1,000 hours. The film's more important than the Emmy. And you know, they just keep stepping up, and then they meet the people from the footage and from the film. And we're just blown away by how we've been embraced. And it's just fuel for us. It just helps keep pushing us forward, just like they do when they're over there. And we're honored to be part of it.
Mike, you mentioned earlier that having your son there with you was the best decision that you made. This is a dumb question, perhaps, but how did the experience change him and your relationship with him?
I began to relate to him as a colleague. As an equal, not as a son. I was griping at because I didn't feel that he was, you know, wasn't, you know, he's a brilliant young man. And he was at a great university. I didn't think he was motivated, you know. And I think all of his fathers sometimes think our sons, you know, you got to get out there. You got to do, you know, do this sort of thing. And he stepped up to the plate and did this. Not for me, but for him. And we talk every day, several times a day. I'm now asking him for advice. I'm, you know, faced right now at a crossroads about where I should go in my career and what I should do. And I talk to Carlos. I ask him for advice. And it changed the entire dynamic because he's a peer. He is now a staff correspondent for ABC News, a staff producer for ABC News based in New York. And he is one of their most prized producers, and he's only 26 years old.
And both of you have – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, David.
I just want to say one thing, because Mike and Carlos will never say – they'll never talk about themselves. They have a lot of the soldier and Marine mentality where they put the good things that have happened on others, they give it away. Mike and Carlos are the only father and son team to ever embed together. And last year for the Nightline piece that they did, which is a part of the – 2-minute piece that's part of the third act. The film is a 95-minute film. But they were the only father and son team to ever win not one but two Emmys, and they won News Story of the Year. So certainly – beyond the relationship and how they embraced each other is – because I've seen it. It's just from working on the film the last couple of years. But what they did was unprecedented.
I just have to – the best scene of my life, I guess it says it all, was we were at the Emmys last year. and they announced the award, and it's at the Lincoln Theater in New York. The news and documentary Emmys, part of the national Emmys is the entertainment, sports, and then news and documentary. And so we're there, and every anchor in the country is there, every network president is there, everything. And they announced the winner of Story of the Year, and it was us. And yeah, I was dumbfounded, and my son and I walked up together. And I walked up to the mic because I'm the elder, and I did not think we would win this. And I said, you know, my time has come and gone. It's my son's turn. And I put him up to the mic to give the remarks. As a father, what more could you ask, you know? I mean, geez, it was, you know, one person could buy a ticket to this film and I wouldn't care because that happened, you know, that happened.
Now, both of you obviously have gotten pretty deeply into this war. I wondered if each of you could tell me briefly, if you could, how do you think the movie of the entire war is going to end? David.
Actually, I'm going to defer to Mike on this because he has been doing this 30 years and he has been there and I have not been there.
Okay. Well, I will find out because I'm going back with the last combat team going in, Brigade Combat Team, BCT as it's known. It's the Roccasons. The brigade commander is the commander I was with, who was a battalion commander during this film. So we'll find out how this ends. My personal opinion, having been there longer than most anyone in this country, is that I think that we'll get out of there okay at the end of 2014. There will be troops who remain behind. But the thing is, we have this gigantic logistical platform in which we can launch our military operations. When we pull out from there and we've turned over all these bases to the Afghans all around the country, I almost look at it as a cancer because they cannot support those far-flung bases. So bit by bit by bit, their enemy, the Afghan national government's enemy, which is the Taliban, will gradually eat in towards, like a cancer, towards these hearts of the nation, the population centers. And I worry about the future. I do. I truly do.
David, I just heard what is next on Mike's plate for what he's going to be doing. What's next for you?
Next project or next thing next, with the film?
Well, either one.
Well, right now, we made this film with very little money, and the film is just – it's just a moving – very moving – piece to see, and our job right now is to finalize our distribution deal. We're coming out in the spring, and between now and the spring, we are doing we have a lot of gold stars and a lot of families that have requested the film. So Mike and Christian and Brent and Jason and Sean and our team and Carlos are trying to get to as many screenings, like here at Syracuse. We're trying to get out there and use grassroots to help us get the film out, because it's the military audience is an underserved community. It's different than, you know, you look at communities that are equal in size, whether it be African American, Latino, the gay community, all communities that have their own media, their own networks, their own production, you know, product that's made by the community. There's very little of that in the military, and we have an amazing film that Mike is working on, Carlos, that we're working on after this, which is the chaplain's point of view. As I mentioned earlier in the interview, Justin Roberts, an Army chaplain who's very tight with all of us and very close to Mike, he was shooting something. You know, he doesn't have a gun, so he carries a camera, and he went to film school. So he, after spending time with us on this film, gave us the footage to make a film that we'll come out with, you know, a year from now. From a chaplain's perspective, which is unique, hasn't been done. And You know, but the biggest thing right now is to get this film out to the largest audience in America so we can help, like the soldiers do and the Marines, help try to make a difference.
So people listening to this are going to want to know where they can go to see this. So what is the answer to that question? Is it to wait until you get a general release? What should folks do?
Well, what you should do is you should come to the Facebook page for the Hornet's Nest film, and we are putting up the screening list. We have multiple screenings coming up over the winter. It's our job right now to, you know, to keep the audience out there excited about this and that it's coming. We have screenings coming up all over the country. So I would check out the Facebook. On the Facebook, you can also see the comments by the actual community, the wives, the members of the units, the Gold Star families, what they say about it. We don't edit any of it. We've actually had the families do national media, or the members of the units do national media with us, where none of us even went to it. They actually physically went to the television station and they sat there. We didn't even program them what to do, didn't tell them. We just said, tell your honest opinion of what it is for you. And their comments, again, are humbling and motivating for us. So I would check the Facebook out to answer the question. Check the Facebook out. We're posting every couple of days, different screenings coming up. The screening's coming up in the next couple – depends when this goes on. But the screening's coming up on November 5th in Crowley, Louisiana, for a 2-8 Marine family who lost their son, a young kid, Matthew Richard, who actually is a saw gunner. And in 09, laid down in front of you, right, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
He actually, I don't know if he saved your life, protected you.
Well, he saved my life because I was going to die. And he jumped over me and laid down covering fire so I could get out of an ambush situation.
And this young corporal went back with the same unit, the 2-8 and 11, and was killed by an IED. And their family requested it. So we're doing that. Then we have a huge event on Veterans Day in Napa, California, Napa. We won't enter any film contests, by the way. We won't do film festivals to try to win awards. We have a young sergeant in the film, Sergeant Sizemore, that actually gets 2 Bronze Stars for the same action, which the general says to me he's never given someone that before. And the minute the camera's off the general and him getting the awards, he turns to the camera and says, I'd gladly trade my medals for AC and Lynchcog any day. So for us, that said to us, we're not going to go out and try to compete for awards and trophies. But if a film festival wants to do a day to support those who serve, we'll come in gangbusters. We will come in. We'll tell our community. We'll work just the way we were embraced here at Syracuse also. You know, they said, you know, would love to screen the film. You obviously have a big presence in Hollywood with a lot of your alumni and how many people from Syracuse are actually in the entertainment community. And we'll come any place we're shown love because we want to spread it around and help give back to the community.
Is there any idea down the road that this might be something that will be generally released or
will be on HBO
or something
Hey, look, our goals are not small here.
Okay.
This is not going to be a documentary that goes silently into the night. We want this to be a major release. And frankly, we're 99% there to making that happen. And we tell you more, except we're in negotiations now. But this will be released. It'll be across the nation. And, you know, early next year, late winter, early spring, be looking for the Hornet's Nest. And if you go to thehornetsnestmovie.com, you can see the trailer and read all about the movie and, you know, get to know about it, thehornetsnestmovie.com.
And then to answer the question more, too, after we go out theatrically, then you will have it available for, you know, DVD, VOD, download, Netflix, and then, you know, hopefully we'll be on, you know, the HBOs or Showtimes, one of the networks we'll make a deal with, and then you see it on TV because most films, they ammo it down over 4 or 5 years, so they go to different platforms.
Okay. Let me get to the 3 questions at the end. We'll start, Mike, with you, and we'll alternate back and forth. What's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
How to be an old guy and have fun. You know, retiring gracefully, I guess. You know, now you've got me on this. And I never, never retire, I think, would be my chapter of my book I'm in right now.
David, what about you?
right now try to make a difference. When we first started our company, High Road Entertainment, you know, my kids were just born, and my kids are now 11, 11, and 9, and they've had a profound impact on me with trying to make the planet better and do things that give back. So I mean, other pictures we worked on before this, which this, in my opinion, is the most important picture I'll ever work on in my life. But we did Running the Sahara with Matt Damon, James Bond, and Hans Zimmer, which created a huge water charity. We did La Source last year, another one with Don Cheadle. So we've been trying to do things with water and helping people get fresh, clean water. But the chapter in my life, make a difference.
And Mike, what's your worst trait?
Forgetfulness. You know, my mother died of Alzheimer's, and so my brothers and I, we all kind of have a dark joke about, okay, which one of us is going to die of that disease, and forgetfulness is my worst trait, and I worry that it's, you know, it's early onset Alzheimer's.
David, what about you, your worst trait?
Trying to bite off more than I can chew and then procrastinating about the things that I should do and don't do because I overcommitted myself.
And finally, Mike, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
That I made a film, for God's sake. You know, I'm this kid from the prairie of Oklahoma. My dad was a wheat farmer and a refinery worker. My mom was a teacher. And I made a film. Yeah. That surprised me.
David, what about you?
Just still in the business, making projects and trying to make a difference. It still surprises me because I didn't start off out in Hollywood. You can probably tell from my accent, I'm from Boston originally. And just that I still keep getting to do what I passionately embrace in my life. And this makes my family very proud of me, and that's important to me.
That was Mike Boettcher and David Salzberg, and the movie is The Hornet's Nest. Thanks to both of you for talking with me.
That was great. Great fun. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For a longer version of the interview you just heard, go to WRVO.org, and please also join me again next week on WRVO Public Media for more conversation in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein, Eric Lyons, and Alexandra Curtis. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.